Welcome to the Rural Births podcast. This podcast was created to record and share stories from the many rural women who have birthed, to allow them to voice their experience and learn from them. I want rural women who are pregnant, planning to get pregnant, or entering their postpartum period to feel supported and know that, although care may be via distance, there are options. Thank you for listening. This podcast is produced on Yuin Country. We acknowledge the innate birthing wisdoms and traditions held by the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, the traditional custodians of this land. We remember the first women of this nation, the custodians of land and birth, who birthed on country in culture and tradition. Here, as we share in stories of birth, preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum experiences from remote, rural, and outer regional communities, may we remember and stand for the cultural significance of birth, women's business, and birthing on country. May we nurture and support women through this rite of passage as we hear of possibilities ignited and limitations created. May we share in the power of storytelling and memory as we listen and learn from these birth stories. And may we always remember the ancestral wisdoms belonging to the country these birth stories occur on today. Shannon is a mum of three, living on the land in rural Queensland. She and her family live about an hour from Roma in Muckadilla. Shannon has both birthed in the local rural maternity unit using GP shared care and at Mater Mothers in Brisbane. Shannon's first birth was at Roma Hospital. She worked with local midwives and a GP throughout her pregnancy. Shannon had prepared for her birth and labour through reading, enjoying both Kaz Cook's Up the Duff and Juju Sundun and Sarah Murdoch's Birth Skills. These books both proved useful. Shannon appreciated Cook's sharing of her own birth that didn't go to plan and found the pain management skills from Birth Skills really accessible, as during this first birth, Shannon experienced an extended transition due to complications. Shannon had had a leak in her hind waters and was advised that induction at 40 plus 5 weeks could prevent this risk of infection. Shannon was induced, but felt that her body wasn't yet ready to birth. She did reach 10 centimetres dilation after around 10 hours. But due to a cervical lip and the position of her son, pushing was not progressing. This meant that they needed to call in a fly-in obstetric specialist from Mount Isa. Upon his arrival, and through the use of forceps, Shannon's first son was born. This first birth experience and extended time in transition made Shannon feel very far away from the extra help that can sometimes be needed in emergency situations. And so for her second and third pregnancies, she sought care through Mater Mothers in Brisbane. Her OB supported her and accommodated this distance from care through sharing prenatal appointments with her local GP. Shannon also continued to connect with other local services through attending midwifery appointments at the Roma Hospital. So her care pattern for pregnancies 2 and 3 had 3 branches. Shannon's second and third births were via cesarean section, and they cultivated a sense of calm and were healing experiences. In this interview, Shannon shares her story. She describes the differences between her births. She delves into postpartum and offers solid advice on how rural women can gain further support through associations like Uniting Care and their Rural and Remote Support Program. Thank you again to Shannon, and I hope you enjoy listening.
Mum of three boys. My husband and I run a mixed farming enterprise just outside of Roma in southwest Queensland.
And have you always lived rurally, or did you move inland and leave the city behind?
No, I've always lived rurally. I grew up on a property, a cattle property near Mitchell, so I actually haven't come very far. And yeah, I grew up there. It's actually been in my family for over 100 years. So,
yeah, wow.
I guess you could say rural is definitely in the blood.
Yeah, that, you know, that would probably be really helpful as well. When you eventually did fall pregnant, you had been around people who had these experiences before. So with your first pregnancy, did you already know stuff just from having seen other women around you throughout growing up be pregnant rurally, or did you do a lot of research to discover what was available in your area?
Well, I'm actually a registered nurse. So I had been working at the Mitchell Hospital, and I'd sort of been, we often got women that had given birth in Roma, they'd often then transfer to Mitchell for a few days, or you know, women that I'd run into, I'd talk to. I've always been interested, I think, in women giving birth and that sort of thing. I think at one stage I actually applied and got accepted to do midwifery, but I decided to go overseas instead. So I've always been interested in it, and I am a researcher, so I do a lot of research as well. Plus, I guess with my nursing, I did do some pracs in the labour wards at St Vincent's in Toowoomba. So I have seen, wow, you know, I guess it all firsthand as well, which probably may or may not help when you go through it yourself.
Mm. And how far did you have to travel from your property into the maternity services in Roma?
So we're not too far. We're half an hour. So
yeah,
which is, cool. You know, that's pretty lucky, really.
Yeah, that's awesome. So did that make prenatal care really quite accessible? Did you see mostly midwives, or was there a group program or GP shared care?
Yeah, so I opted to go to the GP shared care, and that worked really well. And I honestly, you know, my GP at the time, she was fantastic. Unfortunately, she's left now. And the midwives at the Roma Hospital are brilliant. So I just did the GP shared care and really had no issues. That all went really smoothly.
Whose advice did you kind of follow when looking for what care pathway to choose? Was it word of mouth, or did you already know your GP?
I'd been working with this GP for a little bit. She'd been there a little while, and I really liked and trusted her. But also I wanted to get to know the midwives at the hospital as well. So I just thought, for me, you know, doing both, you know, just sort of made sense. I think towards the end, I just mainly saw the midwives. I think by the end you start seeing them weekly. So I was sort of seeing them. But yeah, the shared care, I found that it worked quite well.
Was your prenatal care journey pretty run-of-the-mill for your first pregnancy? Like, just the appointments that were required, you didn't really have to travel outside of Roma to seek other things?
Yeah, luckily my first pregnancy was very extremely run-of-the-mill. I didn't have any sort of complications at all. So I was very lucky. I didn't have to go away for anything for that one. So that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do much extra like reading, or did you find any additional courses? Because as rural women, it can be really hard to access some of those things. So, well, not a book. You can always access a book, but sometimes it's cool to hear which one people read.
Oh, absolutely. I read that Kaz Cook, Up the Duff. Yeah, I found that really helpful. And I love the fact that in that book, her outcome wasn't exactly what she was wanting. And I think that was probably, I knew that after being in the labor wards, I knew that, you know, you can't hang your hat on the perfect birth, because anything can change. So for me, my outcome the whole way along was a healthy pregnancy, healthy mom, healthy baby at the end. Like that was what I was sort of, you know, that we all got out of it, that, you know. Yeah. And I guess, you know, by talking to my GP, who I knew would be then looking after me after the birth, and the midwives that were going to be seeing me through the birth, that I, you know, I just felt like seeing them both and having a good connection with both was going to be beneficial.
Yeah. Not that this eventuated, but if you had needed a transfer pathway to elsewhere for your first pregnancy, how far is it to transfer to a high care unit from Roma?
So the high care unit, like if we had to have gone to like a NICU or something, that's Brisbane. So we're about 6 hours west of Brisbane. So yeah. it's a flight. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be an emergency RFDS flight. Would need to get us there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's big. Like it's something there's a lot of disparity between rural areas, because I'm in a rural tiny town with only about 1,000 people, but Canberra is an hour and a half away. Having to access RFDS is, yeah, it's a big kind of thing.
It is. Yeah. Oh, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it is. It is a big thing. I think at the time, like a lot of people I'd known had really good outcomes at the Roma Hospital, and I'd heard really good things about them. And I just thought that I was going to have an easy run-of-the-mill birth. So I thought that I was going to be fine. So, you know, that's sort of why I chose to go there.
So if you wouldn't mind telling us a bit about your first birth story, like what were the facilities like at Roma?
The facilities are good. They're in the middle of doing a completely new hospital, so they'll be much better. Yeah. So I got to 40 weeks and 5 days. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I had a hindwater leak, which it was not ideal, because I was really, really, I knew the complications that could arise if you get induced, and I was really anti being induced. Unfortunately, with a hindwater leak, it does mean that you're susceptible to infection. And so here was a really hard moment, because I can remember the midwife saying to me, you don't have to get induced. If you don't want to, you can say no. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's saying, you know, you need to be induced within 24 hours because you're going to get, otherwise you might get an infection, but your cervix is high and it's closed. So I knew that I wasn't ready, but on the other hand, I knew I wasn't ready. So there was that part of me that wanted to wait, but then there's the other part of me that knows I would never forgive myself if I waited and got an infection and that compromised my baby. So I had to make that decision and decide that the next morning we would go in and I'd be put straight on a Cinto drip and to be induced.
Okay.
So that was, it was tough. It was, because it just wasn't the way I wanted to go. But that, you know, at the end of the day, I made the call, and would I do it again? Yes.
What was the Syntocin like for you? How did your body respond to it?
Well, look, it responded quite well. It took a while. So I think they started the drip at like 9 a.m. It wasn't until 1:30. Oh, sorry. Yeah, 9 a.m. It wasn't until 1:30 that afternoon that I actually dilated a centimeter. So my body really wasn't ready for labor. Mm-hmm. It took that long for it to get going. And when it did, you know, it cranked up, and you know, I it sort of cranked up. And I remember the midwife on the afternoon shift going, oh, this is going really well. And, you know, you'll have this baby on my shift. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that'll be good. And I got to 10 centimeters. I mean, remember distinctly, I was 10 centimeters at 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
And
that's a long journey to get there as well, but like, fantastic.
yeah, it wasn't too bad. Like, I guess that's pretty much a centimeter an hour, you know.
Yeah.
So I got there and then we discovered that I had a cervical lip.
Okay.
And that was blocking Albie, our son, that was blocking him from getting out. So then he actually turned and went posterior. And then things started to get a bit hectic. Unfortunately, when I, you know, unfortunately, the two great obstetricians that were on at Roma at the time, they weren't there. And the other doctor that was there, it all got a bit out of his depth. And so, unfortunately, I just couldn't seem to shift him past that cervical lip. And then I think, you know, by the time they suddenly realized that they were in trouble, they had to call for help. And they had to call in the flying OBGYN, who had to fly in from Mount Isa.
Okay. How long did it take him to get there?
Oh, look, that's probably hazy.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit. So to put it into perspective, I was 10 centimetres at 10 p.m. and yeah. Albie was delivered at 3:49 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a fair while. Yeah. But look, you know, as hard as it was, like being in that second stage for that prolonged time wasn't good. Like the whole thing wasn't good. But I was just lucky for two reasons. One, Albie's heart rate never changed. Like kid never wavered. He wasn't in distress. I know they were probably getting ready for an emergency cesarean. And I knew that in the back of my head. And they would have done it, obviously, but his heart rate didn't change.
Yeah.
And the doctor they flew in, unfortunately, they had to use forceps. But the doctor they flew in was apparently some whiz-bang obstetrician from Melbourne that was doing that rotation. And he was exceptional with this particular type of forceps. And he was brilliant. He helped me get him out as he walked in and pretty much had him out. So, you know, I was just very lucky that's the way it went.
Yeah. Having to sustain a second stage for that prolonged period of time, what did you find helped the most? Because when you're induced, you're often strapped into stuff as well. So it's hard to move around.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that so difficult. I used a TENS machine.
Yep.
I found that really helped. I sat on a ball and I'd sort of leaning over the bed and just, I don't know, I just couldn't have anyone touching me throughout it. But then in between contractions, I know my husband Phil, we'd bought like a massager and he was sort of using that on my back as well, which helped. And also I'd read that book, Birth Skills, okay. And yeah, it was really good. It's by, is it Juju somebody? And, anyway, it's called Birth Skills and it had taught me mentally, you know, how to get through contractions, you know, by either counting or, you know, whatever. So that's, I used a lot of those techniques to get me, you know. Yeah, and then pretty much at that 10 centimeters, once I was sort of having to sit there, you know, for a while there, obviously I was pushing, so I was trying to concentrate on that. But after a while then, you know, it was basically don't push because they were waiting for this doctor. So that was a different kind, like, you know, yeah, it was.
Was it hard to hold back?
It also wasn't, which makes me think that it was just hard. It was also hard waiting there and the pressure, but he mustn't have been in the right position because I wasn't, you know, from what I've seen of labor and from other people's stories, once you have to push, and the baby comes out, Whereas I never really felt that until he rotated him into a better position. And then I did really. But just that waiting and I guess it was just, it was getting scary. They had to call in other people. The room was full of people. The doctor was, you know, you could just see it. And I remember Phil saying at one stage, there was a poor little grad nurse and she was pretty much crying in the corner. It was a bit scary.
That's a lot for you to hold as well in that space. Or did you find that you were able to block it out?
I blocked it out, actually. To be absolutely honest with you, the person I feel really sorry for was my husband, because he at the end of it, he looked so traumatized, that like, poor fellow. He did look. And obviously, you know, you get a baby, and I can just distinctly remember that moment, because we didn't know what we were having. And they said, oh, you know, grab the baby, and we picked him up, and I distinctly remember it. And it's amazing how you would do that. Like, I actually said to Albie, like, obviously we hadn't named him Albie, but I actually said, you are so worth it. That was my first, you know, that's what I sort of said, because, you know, you'd go, women are amazing, because we do that to our body for that baby, you know. Yeah, it's incredible.
And really cool to know that from Melbourne, you were able to fly an OB specialist out and have that kind of high order support in a rural unit.
It is. Well, so the flying, they call him the FOG, flying obstetrician gynae, and they are often around. And at that time he was in Mount Ida. So then they fly him out on like the RFDS or whatever. So it is, they do have that there, that facility. So it is, you know, that it was just really lucky being that they could call him and he could get there.
And did he stay around for long to, like, was anyone able to debrief with you after you'd given birth to offer you the opportunity to talk and hear what had kind of happened, I guess?
Look, all the nurses, I can remember them all coming in and basically going, oh honey, you know, you had a hard birth. I can remember them all doing that. He came back the next morning. And it was really interesting, because the doctor that had the trouble, I can remember him saying, and he's like, oh, the baby's just too big for you. And I remember thinking, but he wasn't, he was 7 pounds 12, that's not big. And then when the flying obstetrician came in to see me to check that everything was okay before he left, I said, well, what happened? And he said, that was just a freak. It probably won't happen again. You did all you could. It wasn't you. It was just, you know, the body didn't, you know, it was just a bit of a freak. And that made me feel so much better, because, you know, I didn't think that Albie was too big for me. But so it was just, unfortunately, it was just one of those things. I know Synto, because obviously it's a synthetic drug. You know, it just, I probably just wasn't fully ready. And then, the cervical, it made everything a bit more difficult.
And had you received any other kind of pain medication or anything to help, particularly kind of through that transition period? Did they offer you anything?
So I had pethidine, I think. I had a pethidine shot. When they got to the point, so they tried to use the suction cap, that didn't work. Mm-hmm. Then they tried small forceps and that didn't work. And by that time I'm like, I can't do this. Like, you need to give me something more for the pain. And they actually had an anaesthetist on at the time, because that's the other thing. In Roma, there mightn't have been an anaesthetist on. So I'd never opted for, you may or may not have been able to get an epidural, basically. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't opted for it. I wish I had, because, you know, that probably would have made everything better. But this anaesthetist gave me what they call a water injection, like in the base of my spine.
How did you find that?
Well, for me, it worked well, because it just numbed that area. You could still feel, like, you know what I mean? Like, I could still feel all the pressure and the pushing and stuff, but it just numbed it a little bit, which I think you need when you've got people sticking big things up your hoo-ha.
And would you would you describe it as that kind of wasp sting sensation when it goes in?
When, when it goes in. I guess so. Yeah, that's probably what it felt like. Yeah, just a bit more than a normal needle.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to hear. Look, some people like, I will never have that needle again.
Oh, really?
So it's nice to hear a nice experience from it. Because I've heard how fantastic they are when they're in.
Yeah. Well, it worked well. And look, honestly, that was the least of my east of my issues.
Yeah.
I think I was just so grateful that they were going to do something for me. So, yeah.
And when you've had like the vacuum and the smaller forceps and then eventually the pro expert kind of OB has come in from Mount Isa and used the larger forceps, did you sustain any injuries during birth? Or
thankfully no, I mean they had to give me an episiotomy. But I didn't tear anymore. I think I might have had a little bit of a guttural tear inside, but nothing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, there was no bigger tears, which I feel really grateful for.
Yeah. And so healing from your episiotomy was okay, and
quicker than I expected.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought it was much quicker than I expected. Don't get me wrong, I was sore for the next few days, but I don't think that was necessarily the episiotomy. I think it was just unfortunately being in that second stage for so long put so much pressure and blood flow to that area. And also I did have a postpartum hemorrhage as well, so that sort of, you know, throws everything into the mix. But once I actually got home and stuff, I found that it did start to heal. Yeah, it did heal quite quickly.
Mm. So how many days were you in hospital post-birth?
I think they're just a normal 4 or 5. So I was in there the normal amount of time.
Yeah. And were you able to have lots of visitors in and enjoy that there, or did you kind of wait until home?
No, we had lots of visitors. It's funny, isn't it? I think with your first one, you want lots and lots of visitors. And I think by the time I got to my third, I was happy to have like minimal. but yeah, no, we had lots of visitors in, which was nice. And look, Roma, like I said, that, you know, the staff there are wonderful. And, you know, they were so good at helping me. Like, I fully credit them for helping me establish breastfeeding. I had no issues with breastfeeding, and they were very good at helping me with that and helping calm Albie and, you know, taught me lots of tips and tricks and stuff. So at the time, it was myself and a friend of mine had actually given birth the day before. And then a few days later, another girl came in, but that was all that was on the ward. So, you know, we were pretty lucky. We got a lot of attention.
Having your friend on the ward as well, did you kind of pop in to each other?
Yeah. I think I can distinctly remember seeing her the next day. Just like, I'd given birth to Abby that morning, and I saw her that next day, and she gave me a hug. She's like, oh, congratulations. And she's like, oh my God. I just looked shell-shocked. And she just, you know, she was kind of like, oh, no. But yeah, it was nice. Yeah, it was nice seeing her.
Yeah. So what were your feelings on birthing in a rural maternity unit after? Did you find it was more limiting or more creating possibilities for you?
No. So that whole thing scared me a little bit because it made me very aware that if something went really wrong, we were all of a sudden a really long way from help. Yeah. And in hindsight, I should have probably gone away and had my first one away. And then if that birth had gone well, come back and had the next ones in Roma. And that's just me. Like I said, there's a lot of people that have had wonderful experiences, you know, in rural areas, and that's brilliant. But that whole experience was scary for me. And we opted to go away for the next two.
Yeah. Yeah. So after what was a little bit kind of traumatic, did you get some ongoing support? Like, were those at-home midwife visits, if they were at home, sorry, that's very presumptive, but were you able to receive kind of some, I guess, postpartum help?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, the girls did. Like, they called out, which is really nice. So, you know, they popped in at home, which, you know, when we're half an hour out of town, I think is pretty cool. Mm. And they were brilliant, you know, and they were there if I, you know, if I had a, I, at about my 6 week mark, I think, I discovered I had a prolapse and I knew what it was.
Yeah.
So I could give them a call and I was freaking out. I gave them a call and had a chat to them and stuff, but I found them really wonderful.
Yeah. And, were they able to help with that or refer elsewhere and you had to travel for?
Yeah. So they referred, me to see, like, start seeing a physio, you know, just to try and, to try and get things back on track.
Yeah. And was that physio in town or did you have to go quite far to access them?
At the time, there wasn't really a women's health physio in Roma. There were several physios. There is now. It's really exciting now. There are two great women's health physios in Roma. So I actually travelled. There was a really well-known physio off the coast off the sunny coast there in the hinterland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some stage, I went and actually saw her, because I did a lot of research myself, but I just also wanted to go and see somebody else. So I actually went and traveled to see her.
Yeah. Great. It's good that you were able to access someone who could help.
Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of people, you can kind of put off dealing with things like that. Like, oh, well. It's a bit hard to access and got a newborn or an infant and traveling does not sound appealing.
No. And look, I didn't do it immediately, but like, I think, you know, I definitely did it, you know, the few months sort of after, you know, once you get over that 3 month stage or whatever, you know, I think I'm pretty confident we must have gone to the beach at some stage because Albie was born in July. So it would have been within the 6 months of birth. So, I went and saw her. So that was really good.
Mm. So, sorry, my voice is going all crackly. I'll just get some water. For connecting with other parents, you said that you had a friend who was in the hospital and just had birthed as well, but were there mothers groups or did you have other ways that you connected?
No, there was mothers groups in town, and it was just by chance actually that there were a group of girls who were all having babies around the same time. And we just sort of all, I don't know, we just sort of all started catching up really. And you know, it was really, those girls were really instrumental, I think, to getting me through, you know, especially the first year, because we'd often have catch ups and we've got photos of the kids as they were sort of growing and it was really helpful. And that was just a by chance thing that we knew, you know, and someone would bring on along another friend who was having a baby around the same time as well. So then we sort of just had this little great little group really.
So rather than being on like the birthing or, well, not birthing because they have birthed, but women to create it or to find it, it's kind of like if you know someone rurally has just had a baby, invite them along, because there aren't always those really organized regimented opportunities to connect just by googling it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And I know they do a bit more now. Like I think it's every Tuesday at the Roma Library. If you have a baby under one, you can go along and that sort of thing. They've got a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what we did. And that, you know, it was really good. And it was easy too when babies don't move and you can go to a coffee shop or something and the kids would sit in the pram. Obviously it started to become a little bit more difficult when they started running. And then that's when it obviously changed to people's houses or whatever.
The playground.
Yes, the playground with fences, if possible.
So for your second and third birth, you moved your care from Roma to Brisbane. So there is kind of the hurdle then of having to travel 6 hours. Just the distance is something that you've got to work with. Did you encounter other things that made it a bit more difficult as you received care via that distance?
I had a wonderful obstetrician, and I'm going to give her a plug here. Her name is Melissa Luckensmeyer, and she is in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And she was fantastic in the fact that she was happy to share care between her and my GP.
Yeah, great.
So I didn't have to go down all the time. And the other thing was, so unfortunately that prolapse for me, when I spoke to her about having my second baby, I said to her, you know, normal birth versus cesarean, what do I do with this prolapse? And she just said, look, it's your call. Some prolapses, they're not bothered by birth. Some get worse. She said, I can't make that decision. She said, I'll support you however you want to give birth, but it's your call. And so after much research, I opted to go an elective cesarean. And so talking to her then, she was very good leading up to the very end. You know, like there's a lot of people that their doctors make them go at like 36 weeks or something and wait, even mm-hmm. if they're having a cesarean. I spoke to her and she said, look, it's your call. She said, you just have to be prepared that if you're stuck out there, you have to give birth in Roma.
Yeah.
So she said, you come down, you know, when it suits you. So I think Henry, he was 39 weeks. And I went down a couple of days before he was born. I also had gestational diabetes with him. So that made things a little bit more complicated too.
So was that something that you managed via nutritionally, or did you need to get the insulin as well? What was that experience like?
Luckily I could manage it nutritionally. So that was really good. I could manage it that way. And it was just one of those things, you know, having to prick yourself, you know, a few times a day and monitor it and just to be a little bit careful. It was probably a good thing really, because I couldn't blow out too much. but yeah, it was just an extra thing to be thinking about.
Yeah. So to visit your doctor, GP, not GP, sorry, OB in Brisbane, how often did you have to travel back and forth, or was it more of a beginning of pregnancy, end of pregnancy kind of thing?
She was pretty good. Like I saw her around that 13 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then I saw her at 20 weeks. Yep. And then she was then happy to sort of alternate with my GP. But I saw her, I think, twice after 20 weeks before, and then the day or so before we went in for the baby So she was, like I said, she was really good.
And did you still do any midwifery appointments, or is it when you go with a OB, you don't have to?
Yeah, no, you can. And I opted to do that because I just thought if something was to happen, it would be nice if the girls up there have my history. And yeah, like I said, I found the midwives at Roma were brilliant. So I still did some midwifery care. So that was good.
Yeah, cool. So you've got like three branches to your care.
Yeah, I know. So that worked really well.
And that's awesome that you're able to access them locally. I really liked the midwife connection as well. I don't know, there was something just so easy and personable about midwife appointments.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They were fantastic. And you know, it's I think it's really exciting for them that they're about to get a new hospital and upgrade facilities and that sort of thing. So that will be great too.
Mm. So for your second pregnancy, you relocated 3 days before 39 weeks. Do you just book a hotel, or did you have friends to stay with?
Because we had Albie and he was two, we booked an apartment not too far from the Mater. And we were really lucky. My mum could come down. And so she came down so she could look after Albie for when we went in. Obviously, that's, you know, when you go, not that it made my decision at all, but it's one of the perks, I guess, of an elective cesarean is, you know, when you're going to have the baby. So, you know, we could line mum up to come down with us. And, you know, it was quite a good, it was a little 3-bedroom apartment or 2-bedroom apartment, I think, and had a bit of space and whatever. So which toddlers need. Yeah.
And so prenatally, did you just reactivate those kind of choices for your third birth?
Yes, we did. So we same doctor, we did another elective cesarean. It was interesting though, I had a funny feeling with Angus, that's our third. I had a funny feeling that he was always going to come sooner. I don't know why. And I can remember saying, and it was just a horrible year because it was 2016. We were in the middle of the biggest harvest ever. And when we were always very lucky when we got pregnant easily. And I remember saying to Phil, would the end of November be okay to have a baby? And Phil's like, yeah, we're done harvesting at the end of November. Well, 2016, we weren't. We were still in the middle of harvest. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to Phil, I think we should be going to Brisbane sooner. I just feel like we should go sooner. And he's like, well, I can't. Like, you know, we're still flat. Like, we're flat. Anyway, we literally got to Brisbane. I had an appointment with the doctor. And then the next day, so we got to Brisbane one day. The next day I had an appointment and the next day was the day of the cesarean. And I woke up at like 4 a.m. on the morning of the cesarean and I had a bloody show. So I was already going into labor. So
good intuition.
And that was slap on 39 weeks. So he would have been, it was so interesting after Albie going so over. Yeah, Angus was coming a bit earlier. But for me, that was actually, it was a really nice thing because I was like, oh my goodness, I've actually got to experience that side of it. So we went into hospital a bit earlier and she came in and whatever. And I remember them saying, I think I was, you know, 3 or 4 centimeters dilated and I hadn't even felt anything. So I had had no pain or anything, but when they went in to do the Caesar, I was well on the way of dilating. So I feel like that was nice that I did get to experience that side of it.
Yeah. And you still managed to relocate just.
You
weren't in the car in labor.
No, thank goodness. No. Like I said, that was hectic. We came back and harvest was still going. So it was a very hectic time.
So for your second and your third birth, you had cesarean section birth. Could you tell us a bit about your birth stories? Like, what was that experience like?
So I guess my biggest fear, and it sounds stupid, doesn't it? But my biggest worry was a big needle going into my spine. that was probably the thing that was freaking me out the most. It's such a different, Henry's birth for me was a really healing thing because Albie's was so chaotic and scary. Henry was calm. It was organized. The needle really didn't hurt. They did a little local and then they put the spinal in. And I can remember, you know, they held him up so I could see him. They gave him to me and we could cuddle him and then they checked him out and then they gave him to us again. Straight out in the recovery room, I was feeding him, like, you know, it was a really healing experience because it was calm and it wasn't scary.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I've heard that said as well, that your next birth can heal some of the hurt or lingering feelings around your first birth.
I sort of hadn't realized, it was really interesting, I hadn't realized how much Albie's birth had affected me until I remember being pregnant with Henry, and sometimes when I drove past the hospital in town, I just start to, like, I could feel my chest, like, constricting, so I knew that I obviously had some anxiety and some nervousness about the whole thing, But yeah, definitely Henry's birth was definitely a, for me, it was, you know, it was very healing. And
yeah,
I just think I would have been really anxious giving birth after what happened the first time, but also anxious that I was going to do more damage down there, if that makes sense. Like I really didn't want to make that prolapse any worse.
Oh, and I get you about that. Like, it is kind of a bit nerve-wracking. Like, I was probably a bit naive to go in and be like, oh no, you just kind of birthed. Yeah, that's what happens. But there is a difference afterwards. And
yes.
I have wondered myself, only having had one child so far, it's like, well, that difference happened there, so maybe it's just going to continue to be different. I'm just going to have this different body. But it is a bit kind of, I guess, confronting at times of like, well, I'm older and now in a mother kind of body. it's a change.
Oh, absolutely. It is a change. And I felt something changed each time for me personally. Yeah, I felt each pregnancy brought something a bit different. Like, for example, for Angus, my left eye hasn't been the same since. Like, I still have really good vision, but it's just not as good as my right eye. Yeah. So, gosh, lucky kids are cute, hey?
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
And so that healing experience in your second birth, and you said you reactivated your choices for birth number three, and did that cesarean also kind of cultivate that same sense of calm as well, and beautiful moments of holding? And
it did. Do you know, it's funny. It's funny because there's, like, I don't regret the choices that I made, and I'm glad, because for me, the prolapse itself has healed so much, it really doesn't bother me like it once did. So I fully think that I made the right choices. But there was a split second when I was seeing my OB, and I was obviously going into labor naturally, that I was kind of like, oh, maybe I should just give this a go. You know what I mean? And just to see. And then I went, oh, but I would really regret it if I do make things worse, because things had healed so much, you know. But it was very straightforward. Like, none of my boys had breathing issues or anything. So you know, the whole experience in the theater was great, you know, and all the staff were wonderful, and yeah, they were all, yeah, I found both experiences were really good.
And postpartum recovery, surely having other kids as well and having a really active farm life, it must be just that bit different as life gets busier. What was it like having more than one kid and going through postpartum?
Yeah, it's hard, hey, because, and it was hard with number three, it was difficult. And it was just, unfortunately, the way it was. Like, I was really lucky my mum could come down and help in Brisbane and look after the other two while we went in and had Angus. And then we came home, and it was just, in hindsight, it was probably really bad timing, because she was still teaching full time. So she had to really, she could spend a couple of days with me, and then she went back teaching. I'd banked on having Phil around more, but we were still harvesting. And so that was really difficult. Like, he could help me as much as he could, but he also had to really be out. And I remember my father-in-law saying, God, we should have hired a girl to help you. And I'm thinking, yes, why did we not do that? Like, I remember thinking, God, I was so stupid. I should have thought about this. But anyway, we got through. A lot of TV, you know, I think that's what you do. You just sit on the couch and you know, I had a clothes horse, so I could do some washing and just hang stuff over the clothes horse, so I didn't have to go outside. Now I look back and think, why the hell didn't I have a dryer? I should have had a dryer. But you just, you know, I'd frozen a lot of meals. My mum came over on weekends, you know, we got through, but definitely with two, it's a little bit more harder. And I think that's probably the negative, with going the cesarean is that recovery. Like, don't get me wrong, my recovery after Albie was awful and long. And I would say my recovery after my cesareans was quicker than my first birth. But it's just, you have to be that bit more careful, I think, too, because obviously you're healing, you know, from internal cuts.
Yeah, yeah. So on reflection, what do you think should be the standard of care for rural birthing women?
Oh, that's a tricky one. On reflection, I just feel that the doctor that's on call needs to be able to be equipped to handle anything, I guess, that comes in. And I think, like I said, I was just a bit unlucky. The two obstetricians that were on, one of them had, I remember him telling me he'd birthed women in like third world countries who had never had any sort of care. So he, you know, they were great. And the doctor I had birthed a lot of babies, but obviously, you know, he came up stumps when he came to me. So I think probably something needs to be in place for that kind of incident, rather than having to call in somebody and then making that mother wait. And like I said, we were just very lucky that Albie was okay, and that he wasn't bothered.
And powerhouse of you, like, amazing for you to go for that length of time in second stage.
Yeah, I know. I look back on it now, and I mean, a lot of it's a blur. They tell you that you don't remember much of it. Yeah. But yeah, I just do remember it. I just do remember being frightened. Yeah. And I think towards the end, you know, I know my heart rate really started to escalate, and I think that's when they started to worry a bit. But I just think that probably, you know, in rural areas, you know, and it's hard for funding, and it's hard staffing wise. And I know it's difficult, but, we need to be equipped to be able to handle situations that are, you know, emergent, like they can be.
Yeah. And it's what's presented in front of you. And you are the person in a rural area, medical professional on duty. And everyone else is quite far away. So the ability to be able to handle that situation on the spot or manage somehow, some way. I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's it. Like, I think it's just, and that is probably in the back of my head, you know, when I went away for the next two, was just, I guess, that night with Albie, it was when I realized how far away we were from big help if we needed it. Mm. That was probably what you know,
the takeaway.
That was the thing that really hit home.
So, from your birthing experiences and experience with prenatal care and postpartum, what advice do you have for rural birthing women?
Yes, absolutely. Look, I think people need to give birth where they're comfortable, but just be prepared for the fact that, you know, if things go wrong, you know, you want to know what the facilities are at the hospital, and, you know what the backup plan is if something does go wrong, so you're prepared. I didn't access them, but the RAF girls, you can line up wonderful girls, RAF girls. It's a great organization. They go around doing like play groups in rural areas. I know this is in Queensland anyway. But you can also line up women to come and stay in your house for like a week or 2 weeks, and their sole job is to play with your children. I know a few friends of mine on properties have accessed that, so that, you know, for a few weeks they've got women playing with their kids while they've got the baby. But just trying to line someone up to help you a little bit, especially if you've had a hard birth or a Caesar. I wish that someone had told me after Albie's birth to treat it like I'd had a Caesar, because I think I did too much, because I was under that assumption that, oh, I'd had a vaginal birth, I should be fine, I should be able to get back to normal. That's what all women do, you know? And I think I overdid it, which is probably what's contributed to me having the prolapse. And I just wish someone had said to me, you know, take it easy and, you know, just, you know, don't overdo it. Don't lift anything too heavy and all of that sort of thing. So I would just say, you know, no matter what birth, take it easy afterwards, you know, and just let your body heal and, you know, try and have something at home in place. So, you know, have your meals cooked or have a dryer, you know, doesn't matter if the house is messy, and ask for help if you need it. I think that's the biggest thing as mums and especially first time mothers, we freak out about the idea of asking for help, but seriously, people don't mind, you know? And I think that's really important.
Well, thank you. That was really fantastic to hear your stories, and your reflections are really powerful as well.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you asking me, and I guess I'm pretty well an open book, and I'm pretty, you know, I guess I think it's something that you know, I think it's something that should be talked about, and especially in rural areas, like it's, I think what you're doing is fantastic, and it's really wonderful for people to hear different people's experiences.
Thank you. Yeah, there's no one rural birth by any means.
No.
It's really useful to hear about the different things, like there's takeaways from every episode, and some are going to be more relevant to this rural area or this rural area, but it's just amazing that people like yourself are willing to share. Really lucky that you're willing to tell me your story.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you're doing it, because, you know, in this day and age, I think it's really, you know, we've got the access to this sort of thing, and it's wonderful to be able to hear other people's stories, and, you know, sometimes it gives people something to think about. And so, you know, I think that's a big thing. And I guess, you know, if I could say anything to anyone, you know, birthing wherever you are, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, you've really got to make sure you look after yourself afterwards, because it is a big thing on your body. And, sometimes I don't think we realize how big a toll that it takes, you know, even if you have extremely easy birth and you bounce back, your body still is healing and it still can take time. And especially after all my research and talking to people, the pelvic floor seems to, you know, you really want to look after that. So that's probably the other thing is, you know, do your exercises and look after it, and don't lift anything over 20 kilos for like a year. after you have
again to Shannon for sharing her experiences as a rural mother of three boys and her three different birth stories. If you would like to share your birth experience, please get in touch on Instagram at rural_births or via Gmail, ruralbirths@gmail.com. And again, thank you.